Welcome to another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. I'm Neil Rosen. We're talking about King Kong today, Kong Skull Island. We're talking about the new live-action version of Beauty and the Beast. We're going to talk about some movies that are on demand and on DVD that are coming out this week, like Elle, the last Bill Paxton movie, or one of the last late Bill Paxton movies called Mean Dreams. What's it called, Bill?
Mean Dreams.
That's right.
I have those often about this show.
Chris Pratt movie called Passengers. I'm joined, as always, by Bill Brigoli.
Hello there.
And Bill McCuddy.
Hi.
And we got a guest this week. One of the funniest comics working today. Just really brilliantly funny. Corey Kahaney. Hi, Corey.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for not saying female comic.
No, funny's funny, man.
Funny's funny.
And zero pressure in that intro.
None at all.
Well, she can be funny, but she's going to talk about movies today. We sent Corey to see Kong Skull Island. So let's talk. They remade, the fourth origin remake of King Kong. There was the original 1933 one. Then they had that Dino De Laurentiis one in the 70s where the Kong climbed the World Trade Center.
That was Numbskull.
With Jessica Lange. Then they had the Peter Jackson one with Naomi Watts.
Even Number.
So now, the yo-yos who did this, I mean, if you remember the original film, the first half, they're on that island where they discover the ape, and nobody really, that's the boring part of the movie. The second part is what everybody remembers, is when he comes to New York and he, like, breaks out of his chains and he, like, climbs the Empire State Building and wreaks havoc on New York. So these idiots...
He dies trying to catch a plane.
These idiots don't even...
Jeffrey Lyon's great
in this
line.
Movie, he doesn't even go to New York. They just stay on the island.
Wrong. That lead up to getting to the island was so... I was on pins and needles.
Seriously?
And I felt like it was a different movie because it was so much about the archaeology of finding Kong.
Wow.
I have to tell you, I like the beginning of this movie, too. And I like the whole ride, actually. And I'm telling you, the things that really are curious to me that people are picking apart, like the homage to Apocalypse Now with the reel-to-reel. I thought that was awesome. I thought that was all great. I thought all the 1970s. There's a great opening joke. Corey, you'll appreciate this. John Goodman pulls up to Washington, D.C., and they're protesting. And he says, "This is the craziest time we'll ever see in Washington, D.C. And everybody cracks up because it's like a great Trump joke in the middle of a 1973 movie.
The music is very Apocalypse Now. And at first it really annoyed me, but then I thought, well, you know what? I would buy this soundtrack because it's all sort of, you know, perfect remixes of everything from that era.
Yeah, I like this movie. I took my wife, Mrs. McCuddy, who's the brains of the outfit. She thought it was great, too. It's like Jurassic Park meets an ape.
Bill Brigoli.
And then John C. Reilly shows up.
John C. Reilly. Oh, right, so there's all these people on the island. John Goodman leads this team of scientists.
Right,
to
and
go
John
to this
Goodman,
mysterious...
they took the air out of him. Like, what happened?
He has lost a little weight.
I mean, it looked like he was deflated.
He's John Goodman light. So you got military personnel headed by Samuel L. Jackson. You've got Tim Hiddleston, who's Tom Hiddleston, who's in the mix. You got Brie Larson, Brie Larson, she's this photojournalist who's there. And then you've got John C. Reilly, who in the beginning of the movie, he's a World War II guy who crash lands on the island, and he's been stuck there since like 1940 something.
It's a cute idea.
So Brie Larson, okay, I mean, she
Brie
wins
Larson
an Academy
is
Award.
Perfect for the lesbians that want to see their type represented as the damsel in distress.
And this is a triumphant return for her after Room.
Okay,
hot in Kong, get Brie Larson.
You know, there's five words. Everybody's got like five words of dialogue. And, you know, look, I understand Samuel L. Jackson doing this because he does everything that's handed to him, including like commercials.
Capital One. What's in his wallet?
What's in your wallet?
Did you hear what he said on a talk show the other night? My wife's hand. Big laugh.
Well, anyway, point is, Brie Larson wins an Oscar for Room, and now she's doing this shit? I mean, seriously, and now she's signed up to do Captain Marvel? I mean, talking about selling out. I mean, you know, what's going on? I mean, is it all about the money? There's no dialogue. There's no character development.
Yeah, but there's a hell of a gray T-shirt.
Which T-shirt?
Oh, her T-shirt.
Her T-shirt. Yeah.
That's look, it, you know, the, to me, this movie is okay. What is wrong with
creepy
movie
Bill
making
comment
today.
Number one.
If you're looking strictly for action and explosions every 5 seconds and no character development and no story,
no, come on, it's a
great
good ride.
Special effect. It's yes,
it's
yes,
it's
they
a good
many
ride.
People are looking for that, Neil.
Well, right. Well, international audiences did. It doesn't have to be any dialogue. It's just look at the explosions, look at the giant CGI Kong. Okay, fine, but you know, to me, I need a story. I need more. And this is made by the same producers who did Godzilla, and I hated that. That was awful. And, you know, I'm sure they're going to do a Godzilla – they'll probably do a Godzilla Kong.
You think so? You think maybe
well,
they –
well, Bill and I were sitting next to each other.
Bit.
Yeah, they teased
the
that
most
a
ridiculous
bit.
Thing where they made us sit through 20 minutes of credits to see a bonus
I
scene.
I stayed, and I felt like I was going to get slapped if I didn't stay because she made it clear that you had to stay.
Right. The publicists are very, very authoritative. They're, like, very dictatorial. It's like, you must stay till after the credits. But it's not at least the Marvel movies. They give you, like,
yeah,
just
something
like a minute
cool.
of credits of just the stars of the movie, and then they give you that. This is like, you know, a key grip, best boy, second animator.
Our buddy Rafer Guzman was smart. He was in the same screening. He went up, went to the bathroom, got a cup of coffee,
yeah, right,
came
get a
back.
Cup of coffee, come right. back in 15 right. minutes. And,
the Thailand crew, the Uzbekistan crew.
Right, right. Cell animating second crew in Vietnam.
But you laugh, but Ving Pang's work never looked better.
That's true. That's
now
true.
Listen, we talked to Brie Larson, didn't we? And
yes.
Didn't she tell us there's more to this movie than we knew about?
That's right.
Before we get... All right, play Brie Ross,
yeah,
and then I want to get back
because there's more to this movie.
It asks some really great questions of us, of what's important to us, what are we willing to risk our life for, how do we want to handle the untouched land on our planet, how do we want to protect the vulnerable, and I think that this movie does it in a really fun way.
Yeah, environmental message. Yeah, the message is like, how do we make money? That's the message of this particular movie for me.
Well, they did recycle a lot, so that's important.
I got a tweet from somebody after I reviewed this and gave it a bad review and said, you are not the audience. Very nice. The guy said, hi, Neil. Love your stuff. You're not the audience for this movie. I know you hated it. It's for kids. Have a kid review it.
I'm not a kid, and I liked it. My wife is not a kid.
What
she liked
like
it.
What did you like about this, Corey? Seriously, what? I don't understand.
It was complete escapism. So I sat there and I didn't think for a second that I got to check my messages. That doesn't happen in a lot of movies. Look, Tom Hiddleston, easy on the eyes. I like the fact that Brie Larson wasn't your typical, you know, 20-pound blonde.
And also, they didn't fall. Their characters
distress.
Did not fall in love.
Right. I
which
love that they didn't fall in love.
No, but the love story, which is the.
The
which
ape
is,
and Brie.
Which is the, it was Beauty that killed the Beast with the, and all the King Kongs, it's like the ape has an infatuation for, be it Faye Ray or Jessica Lange or Naomi Watts, and that's completely shortchanged in this. I mean,
No. What do you mean shortchanged? The idea that Kong lives to protect this tribe of people is completely original interesting to me.
From the creatures
there's
that are
other
below.
Creatures right. there.
There's
I thought
these,
that was interesting.
There's these lizard creatures that are there, and John C. Reilly, who's been on the island for, like, you know, since World War II, says, no, you got to protect Kong. You can't start shooting at him. Because, right, as you said, Bill McCuddy, he's the only person. He's the
Jackson.
Only thing.
I shot him. I'd shoot him again. Like, I did have a problem with Samuel Jackson, who is, like, wildly over the top in this and has just a reprehensible character. But
I felt like you could have taken scripts from other movies where Samuel Jackson played the same role and he could have just done the same dialogue. You know, well, that's not my job, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, he played the same role that he's played many times. John C. Reilly bothered me. Like, I kept thinking he was going to end up being a bad guy.
And it's funny coming from you because he's considered the comic relief of the movie, and people think that he's like a good shot in the arm for it, which gets becoming deadly serious, and then all of a sudden he shows up. So if that's not true, that's interesting. I thought he was okay. I thought he was fun. And Bergoglio, you thought he was the shot in the arm the movie needed.
I was feeling sleepy until John C. Reilly showed up.
We were sitting next to each other.
I know. I've been known to sleep on your shoulder.
I just don't think that they wrote him enough funny for it to be the comic relief.
Yeah, I don't know. I hated the movie, but I got to tell you, I can admire the special effects. Again, if that's what you're looking for, that's fine. I like the 1933 version. Did you ever see the 1933 version,
yes.
The original?
Yes.
I mean, do you think – I know the special effects don't hold up, but there's a certain charm and quaintness, don't you think, to that kind of stuff? I mean, if you look at it, the stop-motion animation, you could kind of look at it and go, like, that's kind of cool. I mean, you got the guy climbing the –
He's a peeping Tom. That's German.
The planes that he's swatting off the Empire State Building, they're like. You know, those prop planes. I mean, that's the way planes were back in 1933.
I think that the guy that wrote you, that tweeted you or messaged you is
tweeted
probably
me.
Right. I mean, it's for tweens. It's not even for kids. It's for 10 to 13-year-old boys and some adventurous girls and the dads. That's what this movie is for.
Neil, is it better than the 1970s or the 1980s or the 2000 version?
It's better than Peter Jackson.
It's better than Peter Jackson's, right?
Yeah.
No. Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Better than
the Dino De Laurentiis piece of shit with Jeff Bridges and
yeah, that was a piece of shit. But I think this is a piece of shit. So I mean, it's like what level?
Well, at least
of piece
you admit it's the cream of the crap.
Yeah. All right. All right. Moving on. All right. So tale as old as time. All right. All right. I'll spare everybody my singing. So. All right, so Disney has
now
this unbelievable movie
listening.
In 1991. It's a cartoon, and it's like nominated for Best Picture. It's the animated film nominated for Best Picture, 1991, Beauty and the Beast. And then a few years later, they bring it on Broadway, and I'm wowed on Broadway. I'm like, my God, they actually turned the animated cartoon into a Broadway stage musical, which is what it was written by Alan Menken and Howard Ashman, and they have a Broadway background. I mean, these guys wrote Broadway musicals, and they wrote Little Shop of Horrors. So the thing was written for Disney, but it really belonged to – people said this deserved to be on a Broadway stage. So now Disney is getting into this habit of milking – their classic films. They did a live-action version of Cinderella. They did a live-action... What's the other one they just did a live-action version? Oh, Jungle Book.
Jungle Book, right.
So now
great
they've
film,
gone to the well
way.
With, and the Lion King's in the works. They're going to do a live-action Lion King. Now, how the hell do you do that since it's all animals? But, I mean, they did that on stage.
I know how they're going to do it. They're going to overproduce it the way they did this and take the charm out of it that the Broadway production had.
Well,
and
the
that's
Broadway
my opinion.
Production, you could appreciate, like when I saw Equus and they had people playing horses or war horse, you had puppet horses. I mean, you know, you're going to have, what are you going to do? You're going to have in the Lion King, you're going to have a CGI Mufasa, or are you going to have a person
Let's
playing?
Let's cast it. So I think it should be Mahershala Ali.
Mahershala Ali. Mahershala. Mahershala Ali.
You're going to get a tweet
Scar?
Now, Corey.
I am.
Yeah.
As Scar?
His agent.
A Mufasa?
Which one?
You got to put him in it. I mean, he's got that beautiful silky voice. And then you put
all the British black actors.
All the unpronounceable
Jackson can complain
yes.
about.
Right.
Yes, let's cast it. And who
what is the Sam
Timon
Jackson
and
role in Lion King?
You could
Simba,
have
Simba.
Simba. Well, Matthew Broderick was Simba. I think he's a you get some kids.
It's her vision. Share her vision.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, so they do this live action thing.
I think Artie Lang should play the bad guy. You know, go against the type.
He should play Pumbaa, and you get the guy. You get Peter Dinklage to play Timon from.
By the way, can we take a time out for just a second and say Artie Lang is great in this new Judd Apatow thing on HBO called Crashing?
Yes,
about
he's great.
Stand-up comics.
Yeah,
I don't love Pete Holmes, but. I like the world around Pete Holmes, and
you
I
like
think,
Crashing. Have you been watching it? Bill McCuddy and Corey Kahaney are two professional. I mean, Bill does stand-up comedy for a long time, and Corey's a professional comic, and she's brilliantly funny. The world of stand-up comedy.
Right. I didn't want to like Crashing, but I have to say it really has grown on me. And I also occasionally will teach. I teach stand-up from time to time for Gotham Comedy Club in New York City, and I now will recommend all of my students because that's really a great representation of what it takes.
Funny People, best movie about stand-up.
I think Funny People is the best movie about stand-up comedy ever.
I loved Funny People, except to the end.
Yeah.
I mean, it petered out.
I mean, you know, whenever anybody, we've had this discussion, but I'd like your take on it, when anybody's tried to do a movie about stand-up comedy, they usually get it wrong. That horrible Sally Field movie, Punchline with Tom Hanks, was awful.
Yeah.
Where there was a locker room
people,
at the comedy store.
He's at the Improv in L.A. Bud Friedman's in the movie. They're using and, you know, it. I think it's very, very funny. It's two different movies, really, when Adam Sandler's character starts pursuing his ex-girlfriend, played by, Leslie Mann.
The best scene, to digress, but the best scene in Funny People is when he's got his parents and they're by the pool and clearly he has made it. He's a huge superstar, and his father's laying on the chaise lounge looking at the Pacific Ocean, and he says, you know who's really funny? Jackie Mason. And not Jackie, no, he says Jackie Gleason.
Jackie Gleason.
Can see the look on Sandler's face of like, I can't
How true is that, right?
That because every comedian has been there. Your parents are always telling you who's better than you.
Yeah, I know. It's
Alan they
King
all do each other's material is pretty funny, too.
He was... I loved him. He was right, exactly.
Rita Rudner's so clean. That's what I get.
That's so funny. Well, anyway, I'll talk about comedian with Pete Holmes for a moment. And
Crashing.
I'm sorry. The episode that was on this particular week, which is very interesting, which is called Barking. And you know, when you started in comedy, Corey, and when you started in comedy, Bill, I mean, there was, and I actually did stand up comedy back in the, I don't want to date myself, let's say the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, where are those kinescopes?
You didn't have to, you know, you picked a number. You went on a Monday night and you picked a number out of a hat and you got to go on at the comic strip or Catch a Rising Star. And according to this now, you've got to get five people to come into the, I don't know if you saw this past Sunday's episode.
I did see it.
Get people to come in and they're bullshitting the people. They're like, I think it was Broadway Comedy. Chris Rock's there. You know, he's not. You know, Eddie Murphy's there. You know, Jay Leno's there. And they're not. He's got to get five people off the street.
Right.
And they're
but
all
they
competing.
Did have, then they had Jim Gaffigan there and they couldn't convince people that Jim Gaffigan was really there, right?
Or something. I don't think it was Jim Gaffigan.
Or Patton Oswalt. Who was it?
I didn't see this.
I don't know. It wasn't Jim Gaffigan, but it was somebody. Wasn't
that's
Kevin
a funny
Hart,
idea, though.
But it was
the real
somebody
guy's
actually
there and
showed
they
up. Somebody right. actually of name value showed up for a brief amount of
Here's
time.
Here's the thing.
You've never gone through
when
that,
Bill
have
and
you?
I started stand-up comedy, they didn't. Barking wasn't really very. That wasn't very present. But what.
You had your friends come.
There was also, like, for example, at the Boston Comedy Club, which is, you know, I think the room that they're using for
yeah, you're
the
right.
set.
They also use the...
We all did it. They would say, can you stand outside and pass out some flyers? There wasn't a count. They didn't count the flyers to see how many people showed up. But now they've turned it into a real system where, you know, if you've got yellow flyers and you five people showed up with yellow flyers, that means you get to go
But you
stage.
Never, like, in this episode, Barking, where you never had to stand that on a corner and hand it. Free comedy show tonight. Comedy show tonight. Free.
She never had to do it. But not to get on stage.
Occasionally they'd say, can you hand out flyers? Just stand out front for a little while. But it wasn't. It wasn't structured the way that it is now. But what bothers me is that still everyone is always looking for the easy way. You know what we did in my day? We all would pile into a cab or a car and we would go do open mics in the outer boroughs because that's where real audiences would show up to an open mic. You know what I mean? Long Island, New Jersey. That was our trick. If we wanted stage time and we didn't want to have to do it in front of comics, we would go out of town.
Interesting. And what about you, Bill? What was your experience?
Well, I started in Washington, D.C., in Baltimore, and I knew the guys who ran the clubs, and I sort of I had that day job. I was the comic everybody hated. I had a really good advertising job during the day. I didn't work the road that much. So, yeah, I invited friends when I thought I was good enough to show my jokes to people. But I worked with strangers for a long time before I invited folks up. And
when you started, Corey, there were... not as many comics as there are now, right? I mean, it seems like there's hundreds and hundreds of comics now. I don't even know how they get stage time, you know? I mean, when you go into a club now, I mean, are these people, you know, how are they even getting on? I mean, really, you know?
Well, first of all, I believe there's always stage time if you want it, and you just have to really want it, and it has to be the only thing you want to do. That is what Crashing is depicting, that this is an all-or-nothing pursuit. There's no... And I love Artie Lang being like, maybe you'll make it, maybe.
Right, right.
I mean, those are great moments. You know, you can't have a marriage, you can't have a social life, you can't have a job. If you really want to be a stand-up comic, this is all there is.
And you have to suck for a while.
You have to go up and be kind of lousy. Do whatever you have to do to get on stage. And, you know, I'd rather not look at how hard it is to get stage time and look at more that you just have to get stage time.
I'm just referring to the episode that was just on this past week.
I just see those people as kind of, you know, they're
Do you think it's realistic?
It's very realistic. very realistic. But I can't. So many of the people who come to me and they're like, I can't get stage time. And I'm like, there are other ways. And you have to think outside the box. You have to produce your own show. You have to do other things.
Right. Corey,
you can do a YouTube
video. Great show,
now.
By the way, that I saw off Broadway that looked at the history of female comics. That was you still is that thing still kicking around?
I occasionally do it as a one person vehicle now, and I call it the Yenta Chronicles.
Yeah, it was very good.
But my point, though, I was very established by the time I did that.
I'm just saying that I really like that show.
I have so many people that will do a private coaching session, and I'm like, talk to a friend at a bar, get a back room. And, you know, create your own stage time. That's how you have to do it nowadays.
All right. So
and
back
you have to work
a few
synagogues.
Corey
and I did a synagogue gig together with our buddy Sam Greenfield. Wasn't Sammy on that for Barbara Martyr's Synagogue in Glen Cove?
It's quite possible. I think if there's a synagogue that is standing.
You drew a blank on this.
Before I get back to Beauty and the Beast, which I'm going to do in 1 second, I want to say, as long as we're talking about Judd Apatow shows, which is what Crashing is, the second season of a Netflix show that Judd Apatow produces with Paul Rust called Love. Has started, and I just binge watched the entire first season. It's really good. It's with Jillian Jacobs, who was in Community, and I highly, highly recommend the show. If you like Judd Apatow's humor, we were talking about funny people, talking about Crashing. I think it's excellent.
It's really good. I've seen both seasons, and his daughter is in
Netflix?
It. She's great.
Yeah, it's on
Netflix.
And it's called Love.
Love. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And they just and you could binge watch the entire first two seasons. It's great. All right. So Beauty and the Beast. So they make a live action thing of Beauty and the Beast. I think the magic's gone. I mean, yes. Is it opulent? Sure. Is it lavish sets? Sure. It checks off all the boxes.
It's in fact over opulent. It's overproduced.
But,
wouldn't you think?
It's like, look, we have a crane camera. Shoots down, goes up Emma Watson's nostrils, goes back up to the sky again, comes back down. My biggest problem with this was because they were being so literal with the characters, they made the clock look like a real clock. They made the teapot look like a real teapot. They didn't have the advantage that drawn animated cartoons have, where you can make really big eyes and huge expressions.
Or the Broadway production, which I think has more charm, where everybody's full size. The Luminaire is like a 6 foot tall candelabra.
Listen, I thought that the animated one, it's under 90 minutes. It just flies by. I like the voices better. I mean, I think that the guy that the late Jerry Orbach, who did the voice of Lumiere, he was just like that. We have to go, much better than Hugh and McGregor, who does the candelabra in the live action version. I also thought the Gaston character was way over the top in the cartoon. No one fights like it. No one looks like it. This guy, yes, it's a live action thing, but it just worked better. This is padded out. They add four new songs to it. Alan Menken wrote the original score. He writes these new songs. They add nothing. I think the problem is that the lyricist that he wrote the original with, Howard Ashman, he's dead. He died of AIDS, and that brilliant, witty lyrics are missing from these four new tunes. This just feels padded out.
Also, I don't want to dump on a guy, but Josh Gad is just not good. He's not good
in
this.
Well, he was great in Book of Mormon on Broadway.
And he was funny in that thing with Billy Crystal.
Oh,
but
he was so good in that.
Yeah, that
comics?
Billy Crystal thing. Yeah,
yeah. Comics.
Like, you know what? Why do we need another movie telling little girls that it's okay to kiss really hideous, big, ugly guys?
That's the only way I got married.
I just feel like Hollywood sits there and said, how can we convince them that they need to be with us? And
Corey, it's a tale as old as time.
You know, to little girls, it's kissing frogs, that other.
Yeah, who came up with this whole thing? It's like the pretty girl's got. Look, I liked Emma Watson. Dan Stevens, the guy who plays the Beast, he's buried under all this fur and makeup, and all he has to really work with is his eyes, and he's very good and he's very expressive. But this, and look, I found myself sitting through this whole movie going, okay, let's see how they do the Be Our Guest number, like, let's see if I'm going to be disappointed.
And it starts out good, and then it gets way overproduced.
Let's see how they're going to do the big ballroom, the Beauty and the Beast title number. I mean, it's impossible not to compare it to the original, but that's what they want you to do because they're emulating the original. But I did not find myself disappointed at the stage play.
I'll tell you another interesting thing, which is, speaking of Luminaire, the 3D version is darker than the 2D version.
Ah.
I've seen clips from the 2D, and I saw the 3D version, and there's about a 1,000 lumen difference between the two, and it's much better in 2D. They should not have done it in 3D.
Yeah, I'm sick of this. I mean, only a couple of films like Avatar And I'm trying to think of another 3D movie that got it right.
Well, The Jungle Book 3D was good.
Yeah, that's true. Do you like movies in 3D, Corey? Or?
Sometimes, when they've got a lot of effects.
Kong would have been okay in 3D, because at least there would have been that story.
Well, it is.
Story.
No, it is. We didn't see it in 3D, but it did get released in 3D.
Okay, well, that I think... But this does.
So now you like Kong more.
Maybe if I saw it in 3D.
Kong is for your 12-year-old son.
Right, the 12-year-old
That's
Neil.
What, it
what do you think of Beauty and
if
Beauty?
Corey and I went with it.
As I mentioned, I didn't like the character development at all. It was just too literal and didn't,
it's rapey
it lost
too.
The charm because of
the
that.
Whole
it's
what? Story is rapey.
Rapey, ah.
Rapey? How rapey? How's it
well,
rapey?
Well, she has to get with him. That's the whole concept, right? To save her, to save him, to save her family, to save the farm, to save.
Yeah, they also had that depressing
like Kevin
flashback
Klein.
Sequence.
I like Kevin Klein as the dad.
Eh.
I don't know. Well, he added a little more gravitas to the situation, but. So what else are we talking about? Passengers.
So we're going to move off the bestiality movie, and we're going to talk about Passengers now.
I love Passengers. Passengers is brilliant. Passengers is a sci-fi
talk
film.
Talk about rapey.
With Jennifer Lawrence. So here's the premise of first.
Corey,
of all,
you a fan of Jennifer?
Age appropriate and look appropriate rapey. You know what I mean?
She won't let it go, the rapey.
So here's the story on Passengers.
Wait, I want to know if Corey likes Jennifer Lawrence. Big fan?
I didn't like her in Joy.
Really?
No.
All right.
Really? The mop? She was selling the miracle mop.
Silver Linings Playbook?
I liked her in that a lot.
The Hunger Games?
Loved.
Katniss Everdeen?
Loved her in Hunger Games, yes.
Okay. Corey, you have the movie sensibilities of a 14-year-old.
You know what? My problem was, I do read a lot of YA, I will say that. My problem with her and Joy is I felt like they could have used someone that was 10 years older that would have really grasped that part. Mm-hmm. I felt like she was too young for the role.
Interesting. Yeah.
Well, in Passengers, it's in the future. They're on this spaceship, which is about the size of like 20 football fields put together. And everybody's in deep hibernation to get to this other planet, which is going to take 120 years to get to this planet. And some asteroid hits the spaceship, and everybody kind of stays sleeping except for one guy, Bill Paxton. And it kind of triggers his...
Bill Paxton?
What?
Not Bill Paxton. I'm sorry.
Chris
Pratt. Chris Pratt. We're going to talk about a Bill Paxton movie in a moment. I'm sorry. Chris Pratt gets woken up. And he spends a year on this thing alone, and it's like a luxury ship. Corey, you play a lot of luxury. It's a luxury ship, but there's nobody on the ship. There's a robot bartender played by Michael Sheehan. He's kind of funny, but the guy has a coach ticket, so he can't get good food. It's like he goes to the coffee machine. It's all computers, like Star Trek. It's like, I'll have a mocha latte. No, you have a coach ticket.
That's a good gag.
You can only get a regular coffee. I'll take the eggs,
Florentine or whatever.
Yeah, right, Florentine. No, I'm sorry.
You can have a hard-boiled egg, right?
Yeah, it's funny. So after a year, he's going out of his mind, and he looks at all these people sleeping in these hibernation
chambers. This is kind of creepy.
And he sees
it's
pretty
like
Jennifer
he goes
Lawrence.
On Tinder.
And
it's basically
like, screw it. I'm going to just wake her up. I need company on this thing. And, you know, and he doesn't tell her that he woke her up. It's an accident. It's amazing that we both woke up on this thing. But,
that's just a spoiler.
Well, no. This is
No, it's all in the trailer.
Early on in the movie. So the thing is,
here's another spoiler. They start having sex.
Does she find out? It's a romantic thing. And will she leave him if she can't go anywhere? Will she not talk to him again? It's a very interesting premise. What did you think of it, Bill?
It was rapey.
Rapey. There you go.
Corey just gave me my favorite word of the day.
Great.
Rapey.
You're not creepy enough without using the word rapey on a regular basis.
Some critics really got down on this movie because they thought it wasn't enough action. I like a story, as going back to King Kong, this has a really, like a Star Trek Next Generation story. There are slow parts, but they're thought-provoking. It's a morality play. It's like if you're stuck on a spaceship for 90 years, you're going to live out the rest of your life there. You want to live it alone or you want to do some screwed up thing and wake somebody up and have some
so essentially, he commits murder.
He's not committing murder.
Yes, he is.
He's not killing her.
Yes, she's dead.
Choosing a different way that she's going to live her life
alone with him.
Well, I don't know.
If she didn't like him, he's screwed.
I thought it was a very thought-provoking movie. I thought there was a lot of humor in it. I thought the action stuff at the end was interesting.
It's a great action film, and you'll like it. I can tell you'll like it.
Did it just get lost in the theaters?
Yeah, that's a good question, because they spent a shitload of money promoting it.
At Christmas, when 3,000 other movies are coming out at the same time.
Yeah, and, but they were pushing that. This is a fail for Jennifer Lawrence. It's a fail for her. Didn't open it.
And the special effects in this are great. They lose the gravity. She's swimming in a pool, and all of a sudden all the water like goes up in the air, and she's like in this ball of water. I mean, and the sets, the production design of this, I've never seen. I mean, this rivals. This is better than any production design on a station.
All right, calm down. People are going to rent it without.
I highly recommend Passengers. You want to talk about rapey? Literally rapey. There's a movie called Elle with Isabelle Huppert that comes on demand, and that's literally about rape. The movie starts where she gets raped. That's the opening shot of the movie. And then it morphs into this S&M thing, which was highly offensive to me. I mean, Paul Verhoeven, who directed the thing, is a misogynist.
Also did Basic Instinct. And also did RoboCop.
Right. And it's written by men. And I mean, what is this? Some twisted version? It's a twisted of like...
It's very French.
The woman gets raped.
I don't defend it.
And all of a sudden she's like...
I said on the air today the movie should be called...
She wants to get raped in the future? That is such a... Pardon my... That's a fucked up premise.
I said the movie should be called You Raped Me, Let's Be Friends. And that's basically what the premise is.
I think it's horrible.
It's pretty crazy.
I was offended by the movie.
But she gives a great performance.
This show is an after show to our television show called...
Sitting Around Talking Pictures.
Called Talking Pictures.
Sitting Around Talking
Pictures. And our colleague on that show, Lisa Rosman, who's a feminist, very strong feminist, agreed with me. She said that, it is offensive. Did you like it, Bill?
I liked her performance. The movie I thought was ridiculous.
Did you like it?
I agree with Bill. Yeah, 100%. I liked her performance.
I liked
her
performance, too.
Yeah.
And there's all
So basically you're saying too rapey.
There's all these weird things in there. I mean,
let's make a distinction here. Rapey is lighthearted nodding to sort of cajoling sexual escapades. Rape is the word rape.
This is rape. She's raped in the beginning of the movie.
Then don't use rapey in this. She was,
Okay.
All right, we've just uncoined the term. The woman who coined it can uncoin it. Those are the rules.
Okay. Well, she's raped in this movie, and then they try to.
I didn't rape her.
And then they try to be funny. I don't think there's anything funny about that topic. I mean, I think this is a twisted, messed up film. I don't like the film. Yes, her performance is great. She deserved an Academy Award nomination. And then there's all these subplots. Their father was a serial killer. That's what made her messed up. There's a cougar mother in the thing. Everybody's having affairs. It's so French, and everybody's accepting of the affairs. I don't know, man. This movie's kind of...
There's something for no one.
Or something for now. I don't know. Okay. I don't know. Anyway.
So what's next, buddy?
So next week we're talking about Wilson, the Woody Harrelson movie that's coming out. And
a basketball?
No.
He's really pushing the envelope.
Wilson was a... What was... In Castaway, Wilson was a...
Volleyball.
It was a volleyball. But Woody was in a movie called White Men Can't Jump, which was about basketball. So look how it all
just
comes
being
full
remade.
Circle. Where are you playing these days, Corey?
Give us a plug. How about a website or a... I had the pleasure of seeing Corey, I'm going to say 6 months ago, right before you were... I could tell it was... We were at Caroline's, and I could tell it was right before you were going to do a TV shot, because you went up and did like 4.5 minutes exactly. It was tight. It was perfect. It was... If something... And everything did get a laugh, but if something didn't get a huge laugh, you just kept motoring. It was just like, nope, not going to stop and kibitz with the audience or try and save it any other way. This is something I'm doing for television. I could totally tell. And then lo and behold, like a week later, you turned up on
Colbert.
I don't want to say Colbert. Yeah.
You've done Colbert. You've done
Caroline's is definitely one of those rooms where I go and I will try to nail the 4.5 because it's the perfect room for that. You know, because it has the vibe of being, you know, like in a. It's very much like the Ed Sullivan Theater. So I like to do.
Is it really?
It's just got that feeling, you know. It's just vast, and you can see the audience. Gotham has that too, but Gotham has a different feel.
Now you did the Letterman show numerous times, and you were the warm-up person for the
audience. At the very end.
And then you've done Colbert, and how have they changed the Ed Sullivan? I heard they did, like, really...
They gutted it, and it used to really be, you know, not all that pleasant or comfortable to be in the dressing rooms. They were really just a holding room. Now they've made them, like, a fun place to hang out. Like, you want to bring your entourage, your family.
Guests that come on the show, I watch the show, talk about how magnificent the ceiling. Apparently they have the stained glass ceiling.
Well, you can see that on the show. It's beautiful.
That they've uncovered from when they built the thing, like at the turn of the century or something like that.
They restored it to its original glory. It's very nice. But, in fairness, when you're on that stage, you remember that Dave used to sit right there. You know what I mean? Because, you know, you're never going to forget Dave.
Boy, I sure do. I mean, I like Stephen, but...
I
love Stephen. I'm just saying.
Well, I like the Colbert Report.
I feel like Dave is still very present there on that stage.
I don't know. When you stand on that stage, do you ever think about the fact that the Beatles were on that stage?
I knew you were going to say that.
You know, that Elvis,
I knew Grandpa was going to bring the Beatles
Elvis Presley.
Alan King was on that stage.
Alan King was on that stage.
So Jackie Mason.
Jackie Mason gave Ed Sullivan the finger on that stage.
Right. It wasn't the finger.
Banned from
it wasn't
Jovis.
The finger. Yeah. Everybody says it was a finger.
I was pointing.
Banned to the Catskills. Banished to the Catskills for 20 years.
I just love that 100 years later, he's still backpedaling.
Yeah, he still talks.
I know.
He still talks about that.
He wanders 57th Street. You can see him almost any time. But where can we see you coming up next?
Oh, that is a good question.
Across this great country.
Next Saturday, I'll be at the Comic Strip over in...
You're in New York City, 2nd Avenue and 82nd Street.
Yeah. I don't have my calendar in front of me. You can always go at CoreyKahaney.com is my website, and you can...
Corey with a C and... Kahaney with a K.
Right.
That's right.
Google any version of Corey Kahaney, and you will, exactly. It will take you to my website. And go on iTunes, and you can listen to my my stuff.
Very funny. Corey, thank you for joining us today. Seriously, it's
can we
my
send
pleasure.
You to movies in the future, and you'll come back and tell
totally.
Us,
regale
Let's,
us you and
with
I
your...
go to more young adult movies that okay. Neil will hate.
That's funny. Yeah, let's... Let's send it to. I think they're making a My Little Pony.
Allegiant. What was that one?
Oh, that's the one with
Divergent.
Shailene Woodley.
Yes.
Woodley.
Oh, we need to have me back to talk about Big Little Lies on HBO.
Well, the summer. Oh, good. Yeah, I'm watching that.
Well, the summer's coming up, so we have all those crappy Marvel comic, Marvel Cinematic Universe crappy movies coming up. So they're all aimed at like teen.
Well, there's a Fast and Furious movie, she should say.
To your credit, Neil, I thought it was a smart thing to say. Send me to a movie that I would never go to. Like, I would never go see King Kong. So sending me there was really, like, you got a different person's perspective who ordinarily wouldn't buy that ticket.
Right. Well,
yes, he's a genius.
Now, that's funny.
I still don't think I would buy a ticket to that. But you know what? It was good that we saw it.
If we can just make one person see it, we've done our job.
There you go.
If you have a 12-year-old son and you're a mom, you won't hate this afternoon if you go see Kong.
Well, before you go, since I got two comics here, one was just unbelievable.
One legit and one sort of.
Would you like me to tell you the meaning of life? Because
I'd like to tell you.
I want to know,
the only two, as I said, there are only two movies that I think accurately portray the comedy world, although I think that Crashing does and there's some TV shows that do. But one is Funny People, which we talked about. Old Borscht Belt comedy. I want to know what you think.
You're forgetting
Mr.
Comedian with Jerry Seinfeld. Excellent.
Yeah,
the
doc.
Okay.
Yeah. I want to know what you thought of Mr. Saturday Night with Billy Crystal, because I loved that film.
I loved it, too. But I loved the Catskills. To me, that was the star.
Get me started. Did you ever play the Catskills before they...
I did.
There's nothing left now.
They're trying to revive it a little bit. I was one of the last... There were four of us left who still played the Catskills.
And they were...
We played...
Susie Essman, one of them?
No.
She lives out there.
There was the Concord.
Oh, I see.
There was
I never did the Concord.
Kutcher's.
I did Kutcher's. I did the Neville. I did...
There was one more.
Of the ones that were left, I did the...
The Raleigh?
No, it was called the Greystone.
That's in South
or
Beach.
The... but I also...
Brickman,
there were
Laurels, the Pines,
there was
the Browns.
There was Landsman's...
Well, who were the last four?
Cottages. The last four of us were Tom Cotter... Corey Kahaney, Stephen Scott, and Ross Bennett.
No kidding.
Wow.
And
Matter of fact, we had a show about the last four comics in the Catskills, and it was called Pastrami on Rye with Mayo.
And were the audiences in the Catskills as tough as because they just would walk out on the Concord. No, you're not funny. They'd give you. I saw Roseanne Barr and Tom Arnold at the Concord. It's actually a very famous show because they all said "fuck you" to the audience at the end of the show. It was like written up in the nobody was laughing. People were walking out. It was just not funny.
They're here all week.
They're tough audiences. So
Jews are by and large very tough audiences.
But you were great. You do this which is on YouTube also if you want to see it. You do this. Christmas Eve
in Philadelphia and in Boston. I have a Christmas Eve show.
It's great.
It's fun.
You're playing to predominantly a Jew.
They're very hard audiences, but you know what? If you're funny, they give it up. It's a very tricky thing.
Yeah.
You know, you're one of us.
Yeah, well,
you're
did.
Not easy to please.
I'm married into the tribe.
I did stand up. I started doing stand up.
I played Tevye in my ninth grade production.
There
you go. So there you go.
All right.
Wow.
Thank you, Corey Kahaney.
We'll have you
back. Thanks for Bill Bregoli. Yes.
Will she come?
Bill
back?
McCuddy.
I'd be glad.
Hey, we watch the bad movies, so you don't have to.
Corey Kahaney. And me, Neil Rosen, we'll talk about Wilson next week. Thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll sit around talking movies with you next week.